Well, good morning. My name is Buck Webb. I'm the family pastor here. And this morning I get the privilege to continue our series called Ordinaries, in which we look at men and women of God who are ordinary individuals who God's used to do some extraordinary things. And this morning we're going to look at a guy named Joshua. And Joshua's life was extraordinary, to say the least. Joshua was a guy who was a spy at one time in his life. He got to be a commander, a general in an army. He was the leader of the nation of Israel. And yet, when you look at his story, and when they write the book about Joshua, the very first verse about him says none of that. It actually says this, look with me if you would, to Joshua chapter 1, verse 1. It says, after the death of Moses, the Lord's servant, the Lord spoke to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' assistant. Now, I don't know about you, but when you read that line, like, if I were writing a book, like, if one day, like, when I die, which they won't, but one day, if somebody wrote a book about me and they put my name in the title and the book was about, like, what the accomplishments I'd done, I would not start with the headline of, he was an assistant. Like, if they were writing a book, I was thinking through, like, some of the book covers, if I was Joshua, like, you know, they made this, like, New York Times bestseller today, like, what would the book cover look like? You know, and so I might say, you know, like, hey, Joshua, I was, like, a commander of God's army, and I would have a picture like this. You know, like, this would be the cover title, right? Like, commander, you know, you can see the title up here, commander of God's army, or, you know, or maybe it would be something like, you know, secret operative in the land of Canaan, and have a cool picture like this one. You know, if you're a little older and you want to go with the Sean Connery version, you can go with that. But, like, you know, like, it would be, like, cool. Like, it would be, like, cool. Or maybe even, I might say, like, the leader of God's people. He led the nation. So I looked for a presidential thing that wouldn't be controversial, so nobody likes, everybody likes George, right? So I put a cover up here, you know, and you would have this title and you'd have this cover, right? Like, and this is what it would look like. But I feel like with this title, this first verse, this is what the cover that Joshua's would look like. That he would get, like, assistant to the regional manager. You know, the like, he gets this kind of, like, second tier thing. You know, and this is Dwight Schrute, by the way, if you don't know, if you've never seen The Office, this is his title, was assistant. So he's assistant to Moses. So now, what is it about us? And maybe you're not like me, maybe you're like, no, assistant to Moses would have been awesome, would have been great. And just real quick, and a quick aside, because I can't, for those of you, like, the reason they started that with that title, by the way, was because of out of their reverence and deference to Moses, and because he's such a pillar of the faith, that they were really deferring to Moses, which, by the way, tells you a lot about how Joshua had to start off his leadership over the nation of Israel. Like, hey, I got to follow Moses, great. But what is it about us, though, that when we hear this title of assistant, that there's something within us that says, like, man, I don't want that. I want people to know all the cool stuff that I got to do. I want them to know about the great things that I get to accomplish. Like, what is it? And that's not a bad thing. You know, because our world, honestly, like, if we're honest, it's really easy to find out who the winners and losers are in our society, right? We're really quick to point out, like, oh, man, look at how successful they are. Look at how great they're doing. You know, and so as I began to think through this week, like, hey, what does it look like? Well, it's really easy. You know, you'd point out the people that, like, hey, you know, if you're in your 20s and you've got you've got this multi-million-dollar company, like, oh, there's a winner. They're being successful in life. If you're, you know, an athlete or a movie star, if you're famous for doing nothing, like, whatever that looks like, it's like, oh, they're successful. And all of us have this desire, and it's not necessarily even a bad thing, that we want to have success. We want to be known as being successful. And so this morning, as I was preparing for this sermon and reading through the life of Joshua, this idea of success kind of came forward. And Joshua's life, I would say, was unquestionably a successful life. And so the question that I want to ask you this morning is simply this, is in our society, we get messages all the time about what success looks like, right? Like, we even have, like, gauges in our lives called Facebook and Instagram and those kind of things to tell us how well we're doing, right? Like, and how well we're doing compared to other people. And if we were to sit down together, you could even, like, point out to me all the people that are on your feed, your friends and family, and you could say, like, oh, yeah, they're doing successful, and they're not quite as successful. And I want to ask this question, is what does success look like? According to God, what does success look like? And I know for many of you, you're like, oh, I know this sermon, I know where he's going with this, I know the answer. And I just want you to pause and say, okay, but when was the last time that you really stopped and said, hey, How am I measuring my life? How am I measuring what success looks like? And what does God have to say about that? And so this morning, I want us to do that. I want us to we're gonna take a look at the life of Joshua, and then we're gonna come back and pause real quick in one moment in time and really look at what I believe is a key to Joshua's success. And so let me give you kind of just this quick overview of Joshua's life. So Joshua was born into slavery in the land of Egypt. He was a slave at the time when, right before Moses freed the people of Egypt, freed the Israelites out of the land of Egypt. And so Joshua would have been one of the guys that walked on dry land across the Red Sea. He would have watched God, you know, God do miraculous things, lead them by a pillar of a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. I keep getting that wrong, but like he was in that time. And Joshua, we see him as, he's one of the 12 spies. So the people of Israel are freed from the land of Egypt. They go off and then they're supposed to go into the promised land and take over the promised land. But before they do that, Moses sends 12 spies into the land. And Joshua is one of those 12 spies. And the spies go and they look and they see the land and they see that, man, there's huge cities and there's the people in there are huge and the harvest is huge. And 10 of them come back to the nation of Israel and they're like, man, it's just so big, it's too big for us. But Joshua and a guy named Caleb come back and say, it is big, and the cities are big, and the walls are big, and the people are big, but our God is big. And if he's with us, we can do this. Unfortunately, the people of Israel believe the other 10. And so God says, hey, you guys, because of your unbelief, because you didn't believe me, you're gonna wander in the wilderness for 40 years. Maybe you've heard that story before. And so they do, and they so Moses has to lead the people of Israel in the wilderness for 40 years until that generation dies off and a new generation will arise. And during that time of wondering, we see Joshua becomes kind of Moses' assistant, his servant. And in that time, Joshua gets to lead the nation of Israel in battle. We read a story one time where Moses is actually up high on this hill. Joshua's the commander of the army, and they're fighting these guys named the Amalekites. And literally, Moses' hands are kind of determining the victory. And so when hands are raised, the Israelites are winning. When his hands go down, the Israelites start losing. And Joshua's in the middle of the battle. And so the story goes that Aaron and Hur, I don't know why they named a guy Hur, but they did. And so anyways, they have to hold Moses' hands up. And so then until the Israelites win the battle, they win the battle. Joshua gets to be that guy who's leading the commander of the army there. Another time we see where when Moses goes up onto the mountain to get the Ten Commandments from God, that Joshua is there with him. And so like when he goes up on the mountain, we don't know exactly how much of that, like getting the Ten Commandments Joshua got to be part of, but he gets to go up on the mountain where nobody else really got to go. Joshua is there when Moses would meet face to face with God in the tent of meeting. It said that Joshua would stay behind in the tent of meeting after Moses left in case God, and scholars believe it was in case God were to return that someone would be there to greet him, that they would know what was going on. And so Joshua's following along in all that. And then finally, as the nation of Israel is about to go to conquer the land, God tells Moses, hey, you can't go into the land. Joshua's gonna take over the nation of Israel. And so right before they go into the land, Joshua takes over the nation of Israel. Moses passes away and Joshua leads the people into the promised land. And he is a great conqueror. He conquers many cities. The Bible tells us he conquers 31 different kings. You know, the story of Joshua in the Battle of Jericho, you know, where Joshua leads the nation of Israel and they walk around the city for 7 days and the walls come falling down. And throughout the book of Joshua, we see how God intervenes and that Joshua obeys what God commands. And it's not Joshua's great intelligence or military strategy that wins the day, but it's God's favor on the nation of Israel that wins the day, and it's God, and it's Joshua's willingness to be obedient to what God's called him to do, even when a lot of times it didn't make sense. You know, I mean, like if there's no military strategy that's like, hey, walk around this city a bunch and then the walls are just gonna fall down. Like that makes sense. Like nobody does that, but Joshua did. And so then you finish the book of Joshua, and Joshua doesn't conquer the entire land. It's not his fault. He just literally didn't have enough time. And God tells him, hey, distribute the land to the people, and give them the challenge to finish the rest of the conquest, to finish driving out the nations. And the reason they were to drive out the nations was because God knew that if they left the nations that were there, that the people would intermarry with them and intermingle with them and begin to worship other gods that were not him. And so we get to this, to the end of Joshua's life. He lives 110 years, and this is what the Bible tells us about Joshua's life. It says, Israel worshiped, this is Joshua 24:31. It says, Israel worshiped Yahweh throughout Joshua's lifetime, during the lifetimes of the elders who outlived Joshua and who had experienced all the works Yahweh had done for Israel. All right, now this is not a small statement, and this by the way, would be the mark of Joshua's success, that Israel worshiped Yahweh throughout his entire lifetime, and even to those that he surrounded himself with, that throughout their lifetimes, Israel worshiped God. And the reason this is significant is because what follows right after the book of Joshua, and in the timeline of Israel, the next book is the book of Judges. And if you remember, if you were here last week and Tim talked about, you know, Ruth and Naomi, and that was during the time of the Judges. And what marks the book of Judges and what marks that time period in Israel's history is this cycle. And it's the cycle where they would prosper in the land, things would go well in the land, and they would forget about God. And they would turn to other things and think and credit other things for giving them success. And then God would, as Tim talked about, would discipline them or bring judgment on them because they were turning away from him. And then the people would remember God, and then God would rescue them, and then they would prosper, and then they would forget about God, and then God would bring judgment on them. And this cycle just continues to go on and on and on. But when you look at Joshua's life and his lifetime, you see a different story. And this morning, the thing I want to talk to you about is just the simple idea that faithfulness to God equals success. That when it comes to God's kingdom, when it comes to God's wishes, that it's faithfulness to him that equals success. And let me point this out really quickly, but like, because when you hear that, sometimes you say, oh, I have to be perfect. Faithfulness does not equal perfection. Faithfulness is simply this idea of what direction are you headed with your life? What steps are you taking to follow God, to trust in him, to trust that what his plan is for your life and what he's calling you to is better than what you want to do sometimes? And so I want us to take us back to this period in time, this short kind of window that we get into Joshua's life, right before he takes over from Moses. It's found in Deuteronomy chapter 31, and it's starting in verse 14. It says, the Lord said to Moses, the time of your death is now approaching. Call Joshua and present yourselves to the tent of meeting so that I may commission him. When Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves at the tent of meeting, the Lord appeared at the tent in a pillar of cloud. The cloud stood at the entrance to the tent. The Lord said to Moses, you are about to rest with your fathers, and these people will soon commit adultery with the foreign gods of the land they are entering. They will abandon me and break the covenant I have made with them. Not the way you want to start off things if you're Joshua, by the way. Hey, Moses, you're about to die, and the people are going to turn their backs on me. The people, and this idea of adultery or this wayward wife is a theme throughout Israel's time, is that God continually compares them to a harlot or a whore or a wife that commits adultery on him. Verse 19, he continues. He says, Therefore, write down this song for yourselves and teach it to the Israelites. Have them recite it so that this song may be a witness for me against the Israelites. When I bring them into the land I swore to give their fathers, a land flowing with milk and honey, they will eat their fill and prosper. They will turn to other gods and worship them, despising me and breaking my covenant. So he tells Moses and Joshua, hey, they're gonna turn their backs on me. What's interesting to me, though, in this passage is what causes them to turn their backs on God. He says, I'm gonna bring them, he uses this language of this land of milk and honey, which is really just kind of this big euphemism for it's a prosperous land. And he says, hey, I'm gonna bring them into the promised land where they're going to prosper and do well. And they're gonna turn their backs on me. And they're gonna chase after other gods. And so many times, isn't that true in our own lives? That it's when things go well in our lives, a lot of times, that we think, oh, look at what I've done. Look at how successful I've been able to be because of how good I am, how hard I've worked. And it's not to say that those things aren't necessarily true, that sometimes, you know, obviously God gives you gifts and talents and you do work hard, but that we stop and we forget to remember who God is. And the nation of Israel is about to do this thing. That as they begin to get into the land, God knows and foresees what's gonna happen. And so what does he do though? He says, hey, here's a song. And this song, by the way, I call it the free bird of the Old Testament. It's like, for those of you that have no idea what that is, it's a really long song. It's like 42 verses long. It's chapter 32 of Deuteronomy. And we won't read the song today, but I would challenge you to go home and read it though and check it out for yourselves. Because it's this song, like, and apparently it was catchy because it was remembered for generations that God said, hey, here's a song. I want to teach it to you so that it'll be a testament against the people when they turn away from me. That the generations from now, they will remember this song. And he wants them to remember why they are in the situation that they're in. He wants them to remember that, hey, when the judgment comes, when my discipline comes that's meant to turn your hearts back toward me, I want you to remember why it's coming and why it's there. What's interesting, though, is that we read in Joshua, you know, we read it here in Deuteronomy, we're like, oh, it's about to come, it's gonna be on there. And I think actually what God was predicting was more of the time of the judges. That God was saying, hey, this time of prosperity is gonna come because Joshua's lifetime is about conquest, right? He's there and the people are moving forward and advancing in the land. One commentator had this to say about it. It says, God is warning Joshua to be prepared for difficult days ahead, for the coming apostasy or turning from God is not merely a possibility, it is certain. Joshua chooses to remain faithful to the task God has assigned to him regardless. And the thing you see throughout Joshua's lifetime is just this staunch belief that if God is for us, we'll have success. That if God has called us to do this task, that we'll have success. So Moses passes away, and then a little bit while later, not long, God is speaking to Joshua in front of the people and giving him this charge. And he says this to him in Joshua chapter 1, verse 6. He says, be strong and courageous, for you will distribute the land I swore to their fathers to give them as an inheritance. Above all, okay? Hear that word, that phrase. Above all, be strong and very courageous to do what? To carefully observe the whole instruction my servant Moses commanded you. He says, if you don't do anything else, be careful to follow what Moses commanded you. And what he was talking about was, what he was referring to is actually the book of Deuteronomy, the Mosaic covenant, the Mosaic law. He continues, do not turn from it to the right or to the left so that you will have success wherever you go. This book of instruction must not depart from your mouth. You are to recite it day and night so that you may carefully observe everything written in it. For then you will prosper and succeed in whatever you do. And so the question we have to ask is, if success is faith, if faithfulness to God equals success, if that's true, how do we remain faithful? Like, what does, like, how do I do that? Because here's, like, if you're the nation of Israel, and think about what they went through. You know, think about the fact that they walked through the Red Sea. They could see, like, these huge, like, they walked, there's this sea, and they see water standing on both sides of them, and they walk through it, and then they forget about God. If you're the nation of Israel, you've seen your grandfathers talk to you about how, like, they walked around this city, and the walls came down, and there's no explanation for it, but God did it. And yet years later, you walk away from that. You turn away from that. How do you remain faithful? What does that look like according to God? Because you and I struggle with those same things, don't we? Like we struggle with those times where we know we've seen God work in our life. Or maybe for some of you, you're new to this and you're like, I don't know, I've never seen that. But you can ask some of the people around you, like where you maybe you've seen God work in your life, and you're like, man, what does this look like? And I know God moved in my life at one time, but then you find yourself, and usually it's some time later, and you're just like, wait, where is my life at now? Why am I not following God the way I want to? Why is that the case? And oftentimes, it's because we have forgotten. It's because we have failed to remember what God has done for us. It's because we have failed to as he talks about here to Joshua, to begin to put those words in our mouths on a daily basis. And in our society and in our culture, success is defined for us all the time. And it's not even if it's not, you know, on purpose or intentionally, the culture holds up people for us and says, hey, this is what success looks like. You know, whether that's on your social media feed, whether that's on the television that you watch, whether it's in the movies or the TV shows that we watch, we see these are the winners, here's the losers. And if we're not careful to remind ourselves of what God says success looks like, we can begin to look at that. And sometimes even in our own lives, we begin to compare ourselves to others, right? And we say things, even internally, we say like, hey, my career, like we feel successful when our career is going well. You know, when we got into the school that we wanted to be in, when our grades are where we want them to be at, when our family is doing well, when our kids are having success, when we look at our bank account. And conversely, when those things go poorly, you feel that guilt, you feel that shame, you feel like, oh, I'm not succeeding, I'm not doing what God's called me to do. And the question is what does God call success? And what God calls success is this faithfulness to him. Eugene Peterson wrote a book, and the title alone is worth it. The title is A Long Obedience in the Same Direction. And it's just simply this idea of obeying God over time. I think one of the biggest problems with our culture and how we define success is that we do so in such a short window. That so often we want to look at, are we successful? And we look at it over these few months or these few years. And the thing I love about Joshua, when we read the book, he's 110 years old, and when do they measure success? At the end of his life. And so I'd simply, this morning, I just want to ask you that question, is how are you defining success? And for many of you, maybe you've answered that question in the past, but this morning is just a chance for you to reevaluate that, for you to reevaluate and just ask God, what am I measuring success by? How have I chosen to say that? And what does it mean to be faithful to you? And what I would simply say to this is this, in Joshua 1:8, it says, this book of instruction must not depart from your mouth. You are to recite it day and night so that you may be carefully observe everything written in it. For then you will prosper and succeed in whatever you do. And here's what I would simply say is that in order to be faithful to God, we must constantly remind ourselves what he's done, who he is, and who we are in him. You see, the thing that what Joshua was pointing back to and what God was calling Joshua to point back to was this book of instruction from Moses. And the thing about that is it was actually pointing forward. Because in order to be the Ten Commandments that Moses passed down, that ultimately they were pointing forward, because even these 10 simple rules that if you try and live by them, you can't. Like these 10 simple rules, it's like, hey, try and do these things, do not do all these things. And what those were meant to do was to say, look, you can't live up to this standard. That they were pointing forward to Jesus. They were pointing forward to someone who could live this perfect life. That when you and I strive to do all, because again, faithfulness is not about perfection. It's about choosing to trust God on a regular basis over time. And what that law was pointing towards was saying, look, hey, look, there's this perfection that God requires of the people that would have a relationship with him, and you can't meet it. And you can't measure up to it, and you're not going to. That we need somebody to do that for us. And what the Bible tells us is that Jesus was that person. That he came, he fulfilled the law. That he lived that perfect life that you and I couldn't live. And then he died on a cross. And that his death on a cross took our place, because he took the punishment that we deserved because of our sin, because of our inability to measure up. Not only did he die on the cross, but then he was buried and he was raised 3 days later. And his resurrection meant that he had power over sin and he had power over death. And then if we place our faith and our trust in him, that we can have a relationship with God. And so this week, I would simply ask you, how are you reminding yourself of that truth? What are we doing? Like, how is it that daily, on a regular basis, how are we reminding ourselves of the truth of what God has done on our behalf, of the truth of the resurrection of Jesus Christ? And so I'm going to ask the band to come out, and we're going to close today, and actually we're going to sing a song. That just like Moses and Joshua taught a song to the people, I want us to close today in that same way, in that same spirit of remembering God and asking God to allow us to remember him on a regular basis, on a daily basis. That this week, you know, as you go to lunch today, as you're going about this week, I would just simply ask you, what are the habits that you have in your life that are reminding you of who God is in your life and what he's done for you? Let me pray for us, and the band's gonna lead us in a song. Jesus, we thank you that we have guys like Joshua, God, that show us what it means to be faithful to you. God, we ask that you would give us success, God, and as you define it, God, this ability, God, to be faithful to you over the long haul. God, I pray that our lives would be marked by following you. God, remind us of who we are in you. We love you. In Jesus' name we pray.